Today's daf is Kuf Yud Gimel and Baba Basra. We are on the very top of the Gemara with the words Tanya Idach. We'll start again where we left off yesterday, but before going to the Gemara, I'm going to go back to the Pesukim. We're going to look at the Pesukim again. We're talking about intermarriage. We're talking about tribal intermarriage. Again, not to be taken out of context, but it's a good intermarriage. It's not good. It's an issur in the Torah, but it's a temporary issur in the Torah. It only was for the first generation going into Eretz Yisrael, and the Pesukim, it's the very last parak of Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar, in terms of parakim, the shortest of the Sfarim, the Chamisha Chumshe Torah. So it's 36 parakim, and this is parak Lamed Vav. So at the end of the Sefer Maaseh, parak Lamed Vav, so the Torah talks about intermarriage amongst the Shvatim. It is prompted by a complaint. The members of the Sheva Menashe come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, look, here's what's going to happen. We have a Yerusha that was given over to five girls, Benos Slavchad, to be specific. And they're entitled to the Yerusha, as was already established earlier in the Sefer, back in Parshas Pinchas. And that's fine. The problem is that when they get married, what's going to happen is that Nesivas Haaretz, the land is going to make its rounds, right? That's the verb that we keep using again and again, the word sovev, to go around. The land is going to make its rounds, because what's going to happen is that they're going to marry, and then the land is going to go to some other shevet, because everything's going to follow the other shevet. How it's going to go to the other person? So that's what our discussion was. It's either going to go through the husband, or it's going to go through the son. One of the two. But in other words, it's going to go to another shevet. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, that's a very good point. And so then he outlines the following Al Pi Hashem. He says everything through instruction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's as follows. If you, I'm just reading the last Pesukim. And again, these Pesukim are just super important for us to understand the Gemara, the give and take in the Gemara. So this is Pasuk Hay already. Okay, they're absolutely right. So look, they marry whoever they want, but when I say whoever they want, of course I mean within the context of their shevet. So they have to marry somebody in their shevet. And now Pasuk Zion. V'lo sisov nachal of Bnei Yisrael mi matel mateh ki ish b'nachla mateh avasav yidbeku b'nei Yisrael. And that way the land will not go from one tribe to another tribe, but rather the land is going to stay within the same tribe. And then v'chol bas yereshes nachla mi matos b'nei Yisrael l'echa mi mishpachas mateh avia tiyah li'isha l'man yushu b'nei Yisrael ish nachla avasav. Pasuk Ches goes on to say that a daughter is going to inherit the nachla of her parents. And we already discussed this pasuk as well, the couple dapim ago, regarding the idea of Yerusha Sabbat, that the daughter is going to inherit. And then pasuk tes, and it sounds repetitive, velosis of nachla mimata lamata acher, that the land should not make around from one tribe to another tribe, ki ish b'nachla so yidbeku, everyone's going to cling to their own tribe, matos b'nei Yisrael, and that way the land itself is going to stand as well. And then a summary, kasher tziva Hashem as Moshe kenas, and that's exactly what they did. They followed the instructions of Moshe Rabbeinu. All this is Al Pi Hashem. Okay, so really what our focus is for, at least the beginning of this morning, is the two Pesukim which seem to be extraordinarily repetitive of one another. Pasuk Zion, Pasuk Tes. Pasuk Zion, V'lo sisov nachal av nei Yisrael mimata amate ki ishma nachal amate avosav yitbeku b'nei Yisrael. And then Pasuk Tes, V'lo sisov nachal mimata amate achir ki ishma nachal aso yitbeku. Matos b'nei Yisrael. So we have two Pesukim that seem to be repetitive, and if we can remind each other, what did we learn yesterday? Now we go back to the Gemara, and I'm just going to chaz a little bit of what we saw yesterday. The contrast is important to see. The two braces that we're quoting, both at the end of yesterday's daf and the beginning of today's daf, are awfully similar to one another. Tanya Besiba Saben, I'm going back to yesterday's daf. I'm basically rereading the Amud Beis. The Amud Beis is just a short couple of lines, several lines. But anyway, Tanya Besiba Saben, Tanya Siba Sabah. So there's Siba Saben, there's Siba Sabah. Again, the word Siba is the same verb that's being used in the Torah that basically means the land transferring from one tribe to another. It can be done through the son, it can be done through the husband. Tanya Besiba Time b'sibas aben. Okay, so we have a brisa that is sibas aben. How does that work? Velosisov nachal of neisomi matel mate. So the first pasuk that the Gemara is quoting is pasuk Zayin. And b'sibas aben akasam medaber. So pasuk Zayin is talking about where it went through the sun. And then atomer b'sibas aben oinu l'b'sibas abal. So the Gemara says, well, how do I know that? Meaning, where in the pasuk is there any indication that the land was transferred because of the sun? So the Gemara says, sibas abal k'shu amir v'losi sov nachla mimata lamata. So the pasuk tests. So the Gemara says, "Harei b'sibas abal amor." Well, that pasuk is talking about sibas abal. So hamani mekayim velosis of nachal of neis from imatel matel b'sibas aben kasam adaber. So it's simply process of elimination that gets us to the point where pasuk zayin has to be talking about sibas aben, and pasuk tests is talking about sibas abal. Okay. A couple things. First of all, yesterday, if you remember, the Gemara also quoted these two psukim, and the Gemara said, well, you know why you have these two psukim? The Gemara was just throwing it out as a suggestion, but it's a suggestion of the Gemara, not to be taken lightly. The Gemara said, I'm quoting on Kufyud Beis Amad Aleph from what we saw yesterday. Well, maybe Lav or Lav Bishnei Lavin. So the Gemara yesterday said, well, it could very well be that just simply the psukim are repetitive, and the Torah is telling us that if and when a person were to marry someone from another tribe, so they're not violating just one law in the Torah, they're violating two law in the Torah. That's what we said yesterday on the Amud Aleph. On the Amud Beis is saying, which we just read, is that no, one pasuk is talking about where land got transferred through the son, and the other one's talking about where land got transferred through the husband. So, note the contrast between where we were in the Amud Aleph of yesterday's daf and where we are now on the Amud Beis of yesterday's daf, where these two psukim, the Gemara now is not entertaining as just simply two repetitive lavin. Okay, so that's just one area to take note. A more general discussion, or not discussion, but just a more general observation is, what we're saying right now is that land can go from one tribe to another in one of two different ways. The truth of the matter is, these two different ways are not usually different. Meaning, it's either going to be where, look, a woman marries somebody from another tribe. So, either she predeceases him, and if that's true, so then the land is going to go to him through what's called Yerusha Sabal, which is obviously what we're discussing. Or, even if he predeceases her, but if they have children, so what's going to happen to her estate when she dies? The estate's going to go to her children. Her children, which is obviously her husband's children, which means that they follow his shevet, which means that the land is going to go from one tribe to another. So even though it sounds like we're making this really big distinction between Sibas Aben and Sibas Abal, the truth of the matter is that most probably and most usually the two of them are going to go hand in hand. Okay? So what we should try to do is find some sort of subtle distinctions between Sibas Aben versus Sibas Abal, but in the overarching generalities, they usually do go hand in hand. Okay. Now,
It goes
back to the basic question: why is there a need for two psukim? That's why in the Amud Aleph of yesterday's daf, the Gemara said, "Okay, two lavim." Meaning, the Amud Aleph basically saying, I don't really see a difference between these two psukim. It's the same basic idea. And the Amud Beis now is parsing between the two, but even as we're parsing, I'm just simply pointing out, it's really parsing, meaning they usually go together. Tanya Idach. Now here in this next brisa, and this is today's daf, so we're going to do the same thing. It's going to be just really subtly different. You have to listen carefully in order to hear the difference between this brisa and the brisa we just quoted. Tanya Idach, we learned in another brisa. Lo seats of nachla mimata lamata acher. So here in brisa number two, we start with pasuk tes. And what do we say regarding pasuk tes? Oh, that's besibas abal kasam adab. That's talking about where land is transferred from the wife to the husband. Now, ata omer besibas abal, I know la besibas aben. The Gemara says, well, how do I know that? Maybe it's talking about sibas aben. Kishu omer lo sis of nachal of neisrael mimata amate. Then the Gemara quotes pasuk zayin. And then the Gemara says, harei sibas aben amor. Well, you see over there, that's definitely talking about sibas aben. So maham and nemekayim lo sis of nachal mimata amate. So now what am I going to do with pasuk tes? So again, process of elimination. If pasuk zayin is talking about sibas aben, so then what pasuk tes talking about? So it's talking about, mimata amate acher besibas aben. It must be talking about the pasuk test talking about Sibas Abal. Now, I told you that in order to hear the difference between Braisa number 1 and Braisa number 2, you have to listen carefully and you have to read and reread it. Because, quite frankly, after you finish reading the two Braisas, it really arrives at the same destination. Braisa number 1 is telling us that Pasuk Zayin is talking about Sibas Haben. And Pasuk Tes is talking about Sibas Habal. What's the difference between Braisa number 1 and Braisa number 2? So I'm not going to go through it right now, but take a look at the top Rashbam on Kufi Gimel Amud Aleph. It's a real subtlety. It's basically what we know and what we have to learn through process of elimination. Meaning in Braisa number 1, the Gemara says, well, I know Pasuk Zayin is talking about Sibas Haben, so what's Pasuk Tes talking about? Oh, it must be talking about Sibas Habal. And in Braisa number 2, flip. Not flip in terms of conclusion, but flip in terms of what we know and what we arrive at. Oh, I know Pasuk Tes is talking about Sibas Habal, so what's Pasuk Zayin talking about? It's talking about Sibas Haben. And it's a real subtlety in terms of the differences between the two, but anyway, they both arrive at the same conclusion. Dekule Amma, and that's where the Gemara picks up from this point going forward. Dekule Amma miyas mimatla mata achir b'sibas habal akasim medaber. My mashma. And so now, a little bit of detective work. So now that we are saying, both Bryces are saying, that Pasuk Zayin's talking about where the son is going to be inheriting his mother's estate, and if it was intermarriage, that means that a land is going to be going from one tribe to another. From one shevet to another shevet. That's Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Tes, on the other hand, is talking about same phenomena where land is going to go from one shevet to another, but through the husband. She, the wife, predeceases him, the husband, and therefore the estate's going to go to him. Where in the Psukim is it clear that Pasuk Tes is talking about estate passing through from the wife to the husband, and in Pasuk Zayin it's going from the mother to her son or daughter? Tell you the truth, you read the psukim, you can read them, you know, numerous times. There is no absolute proof in either pasuk that one's talking about the other. I'll do this exercise with together. I'm reading Pasuk Zayin. And now, again, what you're trying to hear now for is some indication Pasuk Zayin is talking about Sibas Haben. The land is going from mom to the kid. Okay. It's not apparent. Pasuk Tes, Siba Sabal. I'm reading the Pasuk again. Velositsov Nachla mi matela mata acher. And don't let the land go from one tribe to another. Ki ish benachla so yidbeku. Matos bene Yisrael. That's Siba Sabal. Okay. Yeah, so Phil says it's based on the fact of the ish, but if you look back in Pasuk Zayin, it also says the word ish. Okay. I'm not making any new points. What you and I just did was the Gemara is going to do. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Dekule ama miyam mimatla matach ebesibas haba akasa medaber." My mashma, and that's what the Gemara basically wants to know. Where do we see this? How is it indicated in the psukim themselves? The Gemara goes on, "Siman amar." Now that's a little bit strange, and there is room to explore over here in terms of what that means. So some say that that's actually the name of an amara. His name is Siman. Okay. The Mesoras Hashas has that down as the Yesh Lamar. Anyway, so Siman Amar Rabba Bar Rav Shila Amakra Ish. So one indication is what Phil just suggested, that in Pasuk Tes it says Ish, and Ish is a reference to the husband. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Tarvayu Ish Ksiv Behu. And then the Gemara makes the observation which I just made to Phil. What do you mean? It says the Ish in both Psukim. Al Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amakra Yid Beku. So the Gemara says, well, in Pasuk Tes it says the word Yid Beku. Yid Beku is Davak, to cling together, right? Like a husband and wife cling together, but davak ish b'ishto. A husband clings to his wife. So the Gemara says, once again, look back at Pasuk Zayin. Tarvayu yid b'ku ksiv b'hu. Well, yeah, in Pasuk Zayin, same verb. So yid b'ku b'nei Yisrael. So you know what it almost sounds like? Now what I'm going to say is going to sound a little nutty, but what's going to be crazier is that I'm not the first one to say it. A Rishon's going to say it, and you don't have to go that far to find this Rishon. It's right on the daf. Sounds like, for a moment, like as if these Amoraim were not that familiar with the Psukim. My heart skips a beat as I even say that. Like they're not that from. Well, it says Ishan Pasuk Tes, and then the Gemara says, yeah, but it also says Ishan Pasuk Zion. Well, it says Yidbaku in Pasuk Tes. Well, it also says that in Pasuk Zion. It's as if they like didn't like have familiarity with the Pesukim. Look at the top toes, folks. It's really just, I open up a Pandora's box, but look at the top toes, folks. Tavai nami yid b'ku ksiv b'hu. Pa'amim shalo hayu b'kim b'psukim. Just see, hard to make this up. You know, the I had in my head this morning. I'm like, maybe I should just skip this Tosos and talk right. And but anyway, it is interesting.
Maybe it's a statement. It could also be a question.
No, I understand that. But then he quotes another Gemara where we have a similar phenomena where like as if the Amoraim were like, oh, I didn't know that. Right, I wasn't familiar.
I would have said, but the other one also said,
right, correct. In other words, right. Right. You could read, correct. You could read the Gemara. I totally agree. Meaning, the Gemara over here is not so much just like you didn't know that, but more the Gemara was just more making observations.
You had said Ish,
right? Correct. 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 Okay. Anyway, it's interesting and a good just as a Mara Makom. It's very interesting. This Tosfos on Kof Yud Gimel. Back to the Gemara El Amar Rav Amar Kra Yidbeku Mato. So the Gemara says, again, what we're looking for is some telltale sign in Pasuk Tes that tells us that's talking about a relationship between a husband and wife more than Pasuk Zion is doing so. So the Gemara says, the Yidbeku Matos, meaning that when tribes cling together, that gives more of an indication that's talking about the relationship of a husband and wife. So Rav Ashi Amar Amakra Mimate Limate Acher. The Gemara says, I'll give you another telltale. And that is, if you look in Pasuk Tes, it says, Mimate Limate Acher. Somebody who's an outsider. Now, as we mentioned already, and we get to mention it again right now, look, in Yerusha, there are really, if we can put them in categories, there are two types of Yerushas. There is the usual Yerusha, which is blood relatives. Right? My son, my father, my daughter, my mother. So, although that's only a one-directional Yerusha, but in other words, that's a blood relative. And then there's your wife. Not a blood relative. So, in terms of establishing a relationship in the Torah, so who's Acher? Meaning, who's an outsider? Your son, right? Your son's not an outsider. Your son's a blood relative. Your wife is an outsider. I understand. You bring her inside, but in other words, from a Yerusha standpoint, she's not a blood relative. Uven lav acherhu. Another telltale sign that Pasuk Tes is talking about the husband, because it says the word acher, as opposed to in Pasuk Zion, it does not use the word acher. Okay. Okay, fine. Period. Okay, Adkan. So so once again now you end up in Parshas Maaseh. You're in the very last perek. So from today's daf, what do we see? And from yesterday's daf, that there is an issur in the Torah of tribal intermarriage. There are two ways in which, if one were to violate this issur in the Torah, land could be passed from one sheva to another, either from the wife to the husband through what we call Yerusha Sabal, or from the mother to her children, Yerusha Saben. And in both of those circumstances, you can have a situation where land is going to go from one sheva to another. The Torah tells us not to do that. And again, we haven't even made the point clear that this is only for the first generation. Later in the perek, we're going to talk out how this is only for the first generation, not beyond the first generation. Okay, and at another point in time, then we'll ask the question and we'll try to give some answers in terms of if it's only for the first generation and not for later generations, so how does all this help? Meaning, then what's going to end up happening in later generations is that you're going to have some cross-pollinization of the land of Eretz Yisrael from one shevet to another shevet. We'll address that at a later point in time, in the perek. In the meantime, however, that's where we stand, that's where we are right now, and the Gemara, at least in the Amud Beis of yesterday's daf and the Amud Aleph of today's daf, clearly works with the premise that the psukim are not repetitive, and once talking about Yerusha Baal, and once talking about Yerusha Saben. And now we can be even more specific. Pasuk Zion is talking about Yerusha Saben, Pasuk Tes is talking about Yerusha Sabal.
Is this restriction of intermarriage between the tribes, it was lifted on the Tuba. During which temple period was that?
That was during the period of the Shoftim, meaning that was that was as a result of Plegish Begiva. Oh, okay.
That was on the tribe in Binyamin, but this was all the tribes.
The you're talking about the Gemara in the end of Tanis. Okay, I'm not sure. I know what you're making reference to. I'm not sure. Okay, let's continue. Amar Rabbi Abahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yana, Amar Rabbi Umatu Ba Mishmeid Rav Yeshua Ben Karcha. So the Gemara quotes in the Sorah, taking us all the way back to Rav Yeshua Ben Karcha. Minayin Labal Shein Anotel Barai Kebem Mochzak. Okay, a husband inherits his wife, which is well established. We've now spent, this is our third day discussing this topic. We've now quoted the sources in terms of where this comes from. We quoted Psukim in Parshas Pinchas, in Parshas Masei. A husband inherits his wife. In the event that she predeceases him, he inherits her. The Gemara now points out that he is going to inherit her, but only with assets that are on hand at the time of death, but not in terms of receivables. Now, when we talk about receivables, we could be talking about a couple of things. First of all, we could talk about account receivable, meaning let's say somebody owes the money, and the money has not yet been collected, but she has, let's even go so far as to say that she has notes that substantiate the claim that she's owed money. So now these are documented loans, and they are account receivables that are documented, it's paper, and she dies, and she hasn't collected them yet. So that's one form of an account receivable where the husband, the Gemara is now telling us, that the husband's not going to inherit that. Also, in terms of other types of receivables, we could also be talking about Yerusha. We could talking about inheritance, yeah. Meaning that what happens is that she is, let's say, the only daughter of parents, meaning that there's no competing sons, and let's say her parents, she was survived by her parents. So, in other words, in terms of Yerusha, all the Yerusha is going to go to her husband. But that's only assets that she has on hand. But in terms of collectibles, receivables in the form of a Yerusha that will come from her parents but haven't yet received. So if and when her parents do die, they're not going to go to the husband. Okay. Well, so.
Not go to her either.
Huh? Understood. But in other words, it's. Okay. Yeah, fine. Right. But in other words, if. Okay.
She would have received if she had.
Correct. Okay. But anyway, so this is Allah of Raika B'Mochzak. Now, note, by the way, where else do we have this in terms of Yerusha and the laws of Yerusha? And that's Pishnayim. Okay. We know that the husband receives a double. We know that the firstborn receives a double portion of the Yerusha. Right? That, as we already pointed out, that is not in the Parsha of Yerusha back in Parshas Pinchas, but that's rather later in the Torah in Parshas Kisetse. The Torah says that the firstborn is going to get the double portion. Whatever everyone else is getting, everyone else is getting X, so the Bechor is going to get 2X. He's going to get 2 times the amount of what everyone else is getting. In that halacha, again, the Bechor is only going to get 2X of Muchzak, only assets that are on hand. Any receivable is not going to be apportioned with this double portion to the Bechor, but rather, when the estate gets the receivables, meaning the estate will collect the receivables, when the estate gets the receivables at a later point in time, that will be divided equally amongst all the brothers, Bechor included. So this is another area in Halacha where we have this idea of Raika B'Muchzak. Sorry, the Eino Notel Ra'ah K'Bemochzak. So, how do I know, where's the source, and by the way, for the Bechor we have a drasha, meaning the Gemara later on will quote it, we have a favorite drasha when it comes to the Bechor. Question, how do I know that when it comes to Yerusha Sabah we have the same idea? That the husband is only going to be receiving his wife's estate, which is only on hand at the time of death, but not any type of receivable. How do I know that? Shenemar. So the Gemara is now going to quote Psukim. So again, the Psukim that the Gemara is quoting is not going to be Beferish in the Torah, because, as we have already stated, it's not the halacha that the husband inherits his wife is not Beferish in the Torah. So we're going to have to quote Psukim elsewhere in Tanakh that speaks to this idea that when the husband inherits, he's only going to be inheriting only Muchzak, not Roy. Which psukim are we going to quote? So here it's familiar to us, because these are the same psukim that we quoted when we try to establish this idea that the husband inherits his wife. So we're going to start with the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Miskov Holidas Yair, Vayilo 23 Sharim Be'eretz Gilad. So Yair is a son of Skov, and these are early generations. These are Yotzei Mitzrayim, and at least the father was, Skov was, and he gave birth to Yair, and Yair got 23 cities. Now, even though Skov did not have those cities, but Yair got these cities. Minayin, we have asked this question before, we're going to ask this question again. Minayin le'Yair shelo haya lo leSkov. How could it be that Yair has all these cities and his father didn't have those cities? Ela melamish enasa Skov isha umesa bechaye Bechaya. So the Gemara now makes the following speculative statement. Now I say it's speculative because if you remember yesterday when we treated the same topic of this pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, so we came up with a couple of other proposals, including and not limited to, it could very well be that Yair just simply bought those properties. Okay, so what the Gemara now is doing is suggesting the following: that Skov married a woman, and Umesa Bechaye a Marisha. And what happened was is that she, the wife of Skov, died while her Morish was still alive. Her Morish meaning her parents. While her parents were still alive, Umesa Morisha. And now what happened was is that her Morish died, meaning her parents died, V'yarsha Ya'ir. And where did that land go? Well, in other words, the halacha is, again, we know what the halacha is. The halacha is that the husband does not get the ra'ui. He does not get any future Yerusha. He only gets what is currently the holdings at the time of death. And therefore, the estate of Skov's wife's parents is not going to go now to Skov, but rather it's going to go directly to the grandchildren. It's going to go to Yair, V'yarsha Yair. Okay, so that's one possible source in Tanakh that teaches us that when the husband inherits his wife, he only inherits current holdings, but not future receivables. The Omer. And the Gemara says, and I'll give you another pasuk that speaks to the same idea. And again, we quoted this yesterday as well. And this is the end of Sefer Yehoshua, where the Navi describes how Elazar dies, and Pinchas buries his father where? On family property. Family property, it sounds like from the psukim that this is family property that's only owned by Pinchas, and what is it owned by Elazar? Well, how come? So, minan lePinchas shelo hayalo leElazar. How could it be that Pinchas has land and Elazar doesn't have land? And again, this should all sound familiar to us because the Gemara yesterday asked the very same question. And once again, we're going to give the answer. So again, the Gemara's proposal now is that here's what happened. Elazar married a woman, and she died. She died while her parents were still alive. So in other words, yes, Elazar is going to inherit his wife's estate, but only current holdings, not future receivables. And then at a later point in time, her parents died. V'yarsha Pinchas. And where does that estate go? It doesn't go to Elazar, but it goes directly now to the grandchild. It goes to Pinchas. So, another possible source in Tanakh that teaches us that when the husband inherits his wife, he's only receiving her current holdings, not future receivables. The Gemara says, "My v'omer." Two sources, right? Why two? So the Gemara says, because look, as far as the incident regarding Skov and Yair, where Yair got all these cities, 23 cities, and his father didn't own them, and how could it be? So the Gemara conjectured, well, maybe here's what happened. The Gemara now is conjecturing, well, maybe this is what happened. And what we could propose is that Yair married a woman, and she predeceased him, and he inherited all of his wife's estate, including all the cities that she owned. It could be as well. So, I can also inject into the Gemara right now. I'm only injecting because we saw this yesterday's daf. We could also inject that Yair bought those cities. Another possibility. So the Gemara says that, look, that story is not conclusive. We really don't know how Yair got all those cities, and it could be that it's not just one way in which he got them. So Tamalamar v'Elazar ben Aaron meis. So the Gemara says that's the second pasuk. V'chitem adonaf le'bestech haramim. So the Gemara says now, can it not be conceivable that maybe the way that Pinchas got this land is through Cherem? And again, like I said yesterday, I'm going to say again today, Cherem can mean one of two things. Cherem can either mean that somebody dedicated his field as a stei Cherem, which under certain circumstances means it goes directly to the Kohanim. That's one way in which Pinchas could have gotten the land. Or a Cherem could also mean that somebody was Makdish a stei Achuza, and somebody else was Podeit. And we know that under those circumstances, in the Yovel year, it goes to the Kohanim. That's another way that this land could have gone to Pinchas. So the Gemara is saying, so couldn't that be? Amakra b'no nachla hariyolo v'yarsha b'no. So the Gemara says no. Because over there, if you look in the Pesukim in Sefer Yehoshua, it says nachla. It describes it as an inheritance. So things that will be inherited from one generation to the next, and that's why it is not fair to suggest that with that, in, at least with Elazar and Pinchas, the land is was obtained through cherem, through state cherem. Okay. Okay, quick recap of today. So far, we have established that in terms of Nesivas Haaretz, the land making its rounds from one tribe to another. So it can go either through the husband, it can go through the son. We spent a lot of time this morning going through the Pesukim, establishing Pasuk Zayin, Pasuk Tes, talking about Nesivas Haben, and then the other one's talking about Nesivas Habal, and how do we know that? And then we've also went over the halacha today that when it comes to Yerushas Habal, so the husband is only going to get Mukhzak, he's not going to get Roy, much like when it comes to the Bechor. The Bechor is going to get Pishnaim, he'll get the double portion, but only of current holdings, not of future receivables. Same thing is true regarding the husband and the inheritance of his wife. We move on. Ubenei Achos. Okay, we're back to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah now, some time ago, Mishnah is all the way back on Kuf Ches, so the Mishnah gave us a list of people who inherit one another, and now we're talking about the nephews. The nephews are going to be inheriting. Ubenei, remember back in the Mishnah, we had it as Bnei Achayos, the sons of the sisters. The Rashbam's preferred Gerson, preferred explanation of the Mishnah is Bnei Achos, which means that we're talking about a scenario of Gigon. I'm going back to the Rashbam all the way back in the Mishnah, just to set up the case correctly. Kigon b'nei dina nochlin oso sharei dina yoreshes es ruvein acheha uvaneh abayim mikocha. What happens is that we are going to see that a sister can inherit her brother's estate. Now that's talking about a scenario in which the brother dies, he has no children, he has no father, and he has no brothers. Under those circumstances, her sister now is going to inherit. In the event that her sister is dead, but the sister is survived by children, so her children are going to inherit that estate. Or, to put it in much simpler terms, your rich uncle died. Okay, your wealthy uncle died. Why do people have wealthy uncles and not wealthy parents? It's just an oddities of life. So your wealthy uncle died, and what we learned back in the Mishnah is that you're going to be able to inherit. But in other words, but uncle, just to be clear, uncle meaning that it's your mother's brother. But under certain circumstances, it could work where you're going to be inheriting your uncle's estate, because your mother, who is the only sister of the deceased, is going to be inheriting in the event that she's not alive. So then you are able to come through the koach of your mother and able to inherit your wealthy uncle under certain circumstances. The opposite, however, is not true. In such a family structure, if the nephew dies before the uncle is not going to inherit the nephew. Why? Because the relationship is through the mother. And once now the nephew dies, so the avenue of Yerusha is going to go through the patrilineal line, which means that first we look for sons, then we look for his parents, etc., etc. But in other words, it's not going to go through the mother then to her mother's brother. Okay? That was just a quick recap of what we saw back in the Mishnah. The Gemara now comments. And the Gemara says, B'nei Achos Tana. B'nei Achos v'lo b'nos Achos. Now we said the sons of the sister, and the Braisa asks almost incredulously, and not the daughters of the sister? Meaning, look, what do we know? We know the halacha is that the Yerusha goes to first son, and if there are no sons, then daughter. So when we say the B'nei Achos back in the Mishnah, did we really mean that it's only going to be a rich uncle if you're a nephew? What if you're a niece? The niece doesn't get to inherit the rich uncle? Sure she does. Meaning in the event that, in other words, there has to be a lot of circumstances that get us to this point, but you can get there. Meaning in the event that you have the rich uncle dying, survived by no sons, no parents, no brothers, but there's a sister, and the sister herself is not alive, but the sister had a daughter. Under those circumstances, the daughter is going to inherit the rich uncle. So the Gemara is basically asking, I don't understand. When the Mishnah says, B'nei Achos, the nephews, not B'nos Achos? not the nieces.
It's
a generic. So Amr of Shesha. So the Gemara says we're on the top of Kuf Yigimel Amud Beis. Amr of Shesha is the Kadem. So Rav Shesha says, no, we're not saying that the girls are not going to inherit. The girls do inherit. We're saying what we've been saying all along, but we're saying it again now, Kedima. We're just simply saying that in the event that the rich uncle dies, and he survived not by children, not by parents, but by a sister, so in the event that the sister has a son and a daughter, the son has Kedima. The son has precedence, and he will inherit. If there is no son, the daughter's going to inherit. Like what we've been saying all along, and that's all the Mishnah means as well. If you want to force me, I'll come up with some havamina why I would have thought differently. Off the top of my head, I don't have one. So, okay. Tani Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak kamei de Rav Huna. Okay, so that's established. We said now Pshat in the Mishnah in terms of Bnei Achos. Gemara quotes now another Braisa, and this will take us through basically the rest of today's daf. And that is the following Braisa. V'yiresh mekish Yerusha Shnia le'Yerusha Rishona. Ma Yerusha Rishona ben Kodin Labas, af Yerusha Shnia ben Kodin Labas. So, I'm sorry, I spoke too soon. This Braisa is still a continuation of what we learned previously. This is not a new point, and that is Yerusha Shnia. When it comes to Yerusha Shnia, so it's going to be just like Yerusha Rishona. Just like Yerusha Rishona, the son comes before the daughter, and if there's a son, he takes the Yerusha, and the daughter does not take. So too in Yerusha Shnia, like what we're describing. In a scenario where now the Yerusha is not going to the son because there's no son, it's not going to the parents because they're not alive anymore, it's now going to the sister, and she's not alive, it's going to the children of the sister. Under those circumstances, we operate with the same pecking order of first son, then daughter. Okay. Tini Rabba Bar Chanina Kamei de Rav Nachman. V'ayam yom hanchilos banav. And it will be on the day that you do the nachla to the son. Now, this is Parshas Ki Tzeitza, as I mentioned already earlier this morning. This is the other place in the Torah where the Torah talks about Yerusha. Now, specifically, the Torah there in Parshas, in the beginning of Parshas Ki Tzeitza, is talking about the Bechor and his Pishnayim. In the meantime, however, the Gemara over here points out, it says the word Bayom, during the day. And the Gemara darshins, Bayom atamapil nachlos, v'yatamapil nachlos balayla. And it's only during the daytime where there's going to be inheritance, but not during the night. Now, what does that mean? And the Gemara makes a suggestion, which it's going to immediately negate, but it is the suggestion of the Gemara. Amalei Abai Elamiata. So Abai says, do you mean Deshachiv b'yamamahu diyarsei le'abanehu? Man Deshachiv b'layla le'yarsei le'abanehu? What does that mean? Does that mean that the only time that there's going to be a transfer of estate from father to son is only when the death takes place during the day? But if the death takes place at night, so then the Yerusha is not going to, there's not going to be a Yerusha that takes place. And then even in this suggestion, what are we then saying? That called the Alam Gavar, that whoever gets there first, called the Kadim Zacha, I don't know. So, but the Gemara says, but that meaning it's the kind of suggestion of the Gemara where you know the Gemara is going to reject immediately. So the Gemara says no. Dilma din nachlas kamar. So the Gemara says okay. So look, we have the statement. We have to do something with the statement. It is a brisa, so that there's something specific to the day. It can't be that Yerusha is only kicking in when death occurs during the day. The Gemara says that's just simply not tenable. So where do we stand right now in terms of giving some sort of pshan the brisa? So the Gemara says maybe it means din nachlos. Now din nachlos means as follows. We know that judgment should and can only take place during the day. Look at the Rashbam as in the midline Rashbam, four lines down. Dilma din nachlos kamar. Shein danan oso ela bayom kishar dine mamonos. That when it comes to dine mamonos are only adjudicated during the daytime. Dechsiv bahu beis David dino la boker mishpat. Da'akol shar nachlos nami mikra mishpat kedetanya. Dechsiv besov parshas nachlos. When it comes to nachla really is monetary law. Right, it's probate, but in other words, probate is part of monetary law. Vahisal of Nei Yisrael, I'm reading the Rashbam. Vahisal of Nei Yisrael, the Chukas Mishpat, Midikar Lo Mishpat Shmamina Kol Shar Nachlos Nami Bayom. So basically, what we're suggesting now in the Gemara, in terms of Pshan the Braisa, is that it is monetary law, and as monetary law is to be judged during the daytime. And as a result of that, maybe that's what the Torah is driving at. And the Rashbam continues, now in terms of, yes, it's true, the Torah does say that you judge b'chol eis at any time. That means that you could finish judgment at night time. But in terms of when judgment needs to begin, it needs to begin during the day. And in fact, in Sanhedrin, which we're going to get to shortly enough, right after Baba Basra, so we're going to see together that the Haschalas HaDin always has to take place during the day. And now what the Gemara is driving at in terms of a pshat in the Braisa is maybe that's exactly what the Braisa means, that the judgment is going to be during the day. So the back to the Gemara. What the Torah is telling us is that everything is the Torah is contextualizing the entire probate law as din. Okay, and as a result of that, you're going to need a court of three. Okay, we'll start this now and we'll continue this tomorrow. Okay, Rav Yehuda, Damer Rav Yehuda. So let's say you have three people that are coming to visit somebody who's sick. And when we say somebody who's sick, meaning the obviously very sick. And so Ratsu Kosrin, Ratsu Osin Din. So if they want, they could do Ksiva, and if they want, they could do Din. Shnaim, however, if two people are coming in, Kosim Venos and Din. So then they're going to write, but they're not going to do Din. Okay. Right. Okay, what we'll do at this point in time is we'll pause over here. Much discussed at this point over here in the Gemara in terms of the differentiation between three versus two and when coming to visit. But basically, the idea is a segue from what we saw previously, and that is that when we're talking about probate law, when we're talking about adjudicating over a case of Yerusha, so it is like a Beis Din, and it's like monetary law, and therefore that's what the Braisa means when it says Bayom. It has to be done during the day, meaning that it really is tantamount to monetary law. It's Dinei Mamonos, and therefore you need a Beis Din of three. Okay, and this last idea I'll explain much better in the beginning tomorrow morning. Okay, tribal intermarriage, Yerusha Sabal, the Mukhzak, only current holdings, not future holdings for the Yerusha Sabal, similar to that of a Bechor and its Pishnayim, and Pshat in the Mishnah, when the Mishnah talks about the nephew inheriting his wealthy uncle, it's his mother's brother. Under certain circumstances, the nephew's going to inherit, and as we explained at the turn of the page in today's daf, the daughter also can inherit her wealthy uncle under certain circumstances as well. The Mishnah only says the nephew because lekadein, just in terms of precedence. And then we finished off today by identifying Yerusha as being Dina Mamonos, and it needs a court case that needs three, and we'll explain tomorrow better what exactly it means when we talk about Ksiva, what are we writing down.